From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the Synchronicity Key. David Wilcock joins us. An incredible story. By the way, shout out to Thomas Hendy, graphic designer, somewhere out there from all your friends who think the world of you, Thomas. Here's what's happening. If the police arrest you, do they need a warrant to go through your cell phone? Well, courts have been split on that question, and last week, the Obama administration asked the Supreme Court to resolve the issue and rule that the Fourth Amendment allows warrantless cell phone searches. Now, back in 2007, the police arrested a Massachusetts man who appeared to be selling crack cocaine from his car. Well, the police seized his cell phone and noticed that it was receiving calls from, quote, my house, unquote. They opened the phone to determine the number for my house, and that led them to the man's home, where the police found drugs, cash, and guns. Well, the defendant was convicted, but on appeal, he argued that assessing the information on his cell phone without a warrant violated his Fourth Amendment rights. We'll see what happens there. The CIA has released documents which, for the very first time, formally acknowledge its key role in the 1953 coup, which ousted Iran's democratically elected prime minister, Mohammad Mossadegh. The documents were published on the Independent National Security Archive on the 60th anniversary of that coup. At least 24 Egyptian policemen have been killed in one attack by militants in the Sinai Peninsula. The attack on the police convoy was one of the deadliest on security forces there in several years. Boy, half of the West blazing away. As a matter of fact, I was flying back from the White Light Express in Port Townsend, Washington yesterday, flying over Medford, Oregon, in that area, and I could see forest fires all over the place. It was incredible to see. Tragic, no doubt. Firefighters were making some progress as they battled a monster wildfire in central Idaho that has threatened the getaways owned by Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tom Hanks, Bruce Willis, and other celebrities. The 104,000-acre Beaver Creek fire is a beast, looming on the edge of Sun Valley. 400 homes among the 7,700 others are on pre-evacuation status, a warning to homeowners to pack up and get ready to leave at any notice. 14 large fires were burning Monday across Idaho. Why? Some are hit by lightning and they start. It's dry. Let's check in with Mitch Batras, Earth Changes Media. Mitch, this is unbelievable. But what's really the cause? The lightning, the dryness? What is it?
Both. You hit it right on. I don't have any reason to believe it to be anything else. On all the fires that you mentioned, Idaho, Northern California, Montana, Utah, and Oregon, the one that you personally experienced, all of them are reporting that they were ignited by lightning. And, of course, the dry weather.
Right.
In many parts have been extremely dry. You put those two together, and this is what you get. But to keep things in perspective, by far, it's not the largest. It has an impact, perhaps, on at least as many people, if not more people, because there's more of us. But the largest fire ever in American history was 1910 on August 10th. It also happened to be Idaho and Montana, 3 million acres. But killing a small number of people, 85 for such a large area. It's very dangerous. The one that I remember the most, George, was Yellowstone Park. Do you remember that?
I sure do.
88, and I was just stunned. I was just becoming aware of my surroundings, my age, and so forth. I really didn't pay attention before that. Perhaps I don't know. But for some reason, that really stopped me in my tracks. In 1988, in the Yellowstone area, 1.2 million acres were destroyed by fire. And I had been to Yellowstone probably about 10 years prior to that. And I the news was covering it. And to see all that land being destroyed by fire was devastating.
Well, it tells you, Mitch, how vulnerable we are as a nation to these forest fires. I mean, truly unbelievable, the scope and the size and how dangerous they all are. Mitch's website, by the way, which he updates quite frequently, earthchangesmedia.com. Researchers are saying that they have developed a more efficient way to produce a kind of ball lightning in the lab. Talking about lightning, the Colorado team made brilliant clouds of plasma emerge from a specially prepared solution and maintained them for nearly half a second. In nature, ball lightning has been seen to float across land or through buildings and to even bounce through the aisles of aircraft. I kid you not, but its rarity has made it extremely hard to study and to understand. And I think some people have thought they were UFOs when they were balls of lightning just buzzing by. Bears rarely attack humans unless they feel threatened or they're territorial. A 12-year-old girl jogging in Michigan is among the latest victims in a spate of bear attacks that have left 7 people mauled in 5 states since Thursday. What's going on there? Wildlife officials are running tests on a bear that they killed to see if it's the same one that mauled Abby Wetherall on Thursday evening. The girl from Cadillac, Michigan, was out on her nightly jog when she was ambushed by a black bear. This is what she says. I was thinking, this is it. I'm a goner. She tried running from the bear, but it caught her, dropped her to the ground, scraped and clawed at her, she said. She tried to pet it, but that didn't work. So then it just got me again. Then she played dead. The bear walked away. She lucked out there. In New Jersey, they say 27 is the new 18 when it comes to living at your parents' house. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, at least 1 in 4 New Jersey adults ages 18 to 31 live at home now, and 42% are 24 or older. Experts call it an epidemic of millennials leeching off their parents. Well, I wouldn't call it leeching, but that's what they do. But does a bad economy and student loan debt crisis justify the situation? A new survey from Coldwell Banker says parents in the Northeast region are more lenient on this than anywhere else in the U.S. on children moving back home. It's almost like the old days, isn't it? While as companies seek to cut costs and accommodate an increasingly mobile workforce, some employees have had to say goodbye to their personal work areas. A lot of companies are telling employees, hey, stay at home with your computer and do all your work there. Don't even come into the office. Sign of the times, maybe with the internet. Speaking of the internet, let's check in with Lauren Weinstein because I have a question for him. Lauren, how are you?
I'm just fine. How are you doing, George?
Good. I have noticed over the last couple days, I don't know if it's my computer, but it seems to be at home, in the office, the internet on some searches has been very, very slow. Different emails don't come up. Is there anything going on?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of factors. You know, in your particular case, your computer may have some issues. It may need some cleanup. But, you know, more generally, there's a basic problem that we have in this country, which is that our internet speeds for what we pay compared with most of the world are really, really bad.
Really?
I don't think most people have a clue as to how we're being, you know, taken on this. I'll give you an example. There was a study last year that compared internet speeds around the world. They found that a typical cable modem speed performance you could get for $30 here in the Los Angeles area was 10 megabits a second down, 1 megabit a second up. You know. Now, let's say you went to Hong Kong. What do you get in Hong Kong for $37 US per month? 500 megabits a second down, 500 megabits a second up, and a choice of 3 different ISPs.
That's almost instant speed.
It is so fast that the sorts of applications that become possible are things that you couldn't even imagine at the speeds we have here. So when we talk here about 10 megabits a second, 50 megabits a second, even 100 megabits a second, other parts of the world have managed to do so much better than we have for so much less money per month that it's absolutely staggering. And the reason this has happened is because we have allowed a couple of dominant ISPs, we don't have to name them, we know who they are, to absolutely control the internet industry in this country. And they have made sure that effective competition can't move in. And in those other countries, it tends to be private partnerships with government and government says, hey, we think it's a basic important utility for people to have good internet, and the government chips in and the companies associate with the government. And then you have even gigabit networks now. This is the sort of thing that's starting to, you know, Google has experiments they're running in a few cities. But for most people, we're talking about speeds that are pathetic, and we pay 3, 4, 5 times a month more for speeds that are maybe a tenth or much less than what these other countries are getting. I think we can do a lot better than that.
All right, you got it. Lauren, thanks so much. We sure can. Let's speed it up, because I really thought something was wrong. Up next, for the hour, artificial intelligence. And we'll get some technology updates in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Peter Cochran, he's an expert in technology. First of all, he was the head of the British Telecom Research Institute from 1993 to 99. He was appointed chief technologist back in November of 2000. He retired from British Telecom. He formed his own startup company called Concept Labs, which he founded with a group of people from Apple Computers. He's a graduate of Trent Polytechnic and Essex University. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Peter, been about 4 years. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, George?
Good, good. I bet in the 4 years that you were last on with me, technology has increased dramatically, hasn't it?
It sure has.
What's the cause? What's the brain power behind this technological push, Peter?
Well, the brain power very often is the technology itself. Call it positive feedback, if you like. We make a better spanner, we can make a better product, we can make a better spanner. It goes like that. So the computers create better computers. I had a very interesting incident once with Seymour Cray, the founder of Cray Computers. I actually was with him when he was interviewed by the American press, and the interview went like this. Dr. Cray, we hear that you've purchased an Apple laptop to help you design your latest supercomputer, to which Seymour replied, that's very interesting because they've just purchased one of my supercomputers to help them design the next laptop. So there's a little bit of that. It's a very virtuous circle. If you look at the history of mankind, I always quote to students, the simple thing that people can understand, I think, is a lathe. You know, we started with the spears, and the bow and arrow was invented, but we needed better arrow shafts. And the bow itself was used to make a very crude lathe to turn pieces of wood. And with that, we were able to make better and better lathes, and eventually we made metal lathes, and then we could make things like wristwatches and clocks and things of that nature. So some of it's a little counterintuitive. It's like another good example is if you get two very rough stones and you rub them together, you finish up with two very flat surfaces. And there's that magnification of ability from one technology to the other. And it just feeds back. And I don't see it slowing down. I just see it actually accelerating.
Well, and you know, Peter, I love technology, and I think technology is good for society, especially if it's used the proper way. What's out there on the horizon that we don't know about, but you know about it? What do you think?
Well, I think one of the most impressive and most exciting fields that's developing is artificial intelligence, and the best example that people will grasp immediately is this one. If you go to your medical practitioner, and he just graduated yesterday from college, and he's done all his training, and he's been doing that for 7 years, and you ask yourself the question, what does this guy know? It turns out that about 50% of everything that new MD was taught and experienced has now become irrelevant, wrong, or obsolete. So such is the pace of change in all professional spheres, that professionals are struggling to keep up with information and knowledge and experience itself. So stage left in comes IBM Watson, an artificial intelligence engine. On the American game show Jeopardy in 2011, it took out for the first time all human contestants, a machine that was better at general knowledge than you and I. Now, this is quite a breakthrough, way beyond Garry Kasparov being taken out at chess by Deep Blue. This is a really big step forward, and I think intensely powerful. So let me give you an example beyond professional use. I think Google, as a search engine, is rather wonderful and useless at the same time. I'll go in and search, for example, artificial intelligence, and it will come back and tell me there are 37,500,000 citable references on that topic. It'll do it in less than half a second, and then it'll give me the best 10 that it can come up with for me to look at. So I see 10 of 37.5 million possibilities, and that's the useless bit. So here comes a technology, artificial intelligence, that is being built into search engines for everyday use, where your machine, your system, will watch what you're doing. It will tag along, understand what you're researching, what you're working on, possibly what you're thinking, and then it will go and find those 10 references that are more pertinent, more important, more relevant to you than the other 37.5 million. That I find particularly exciting.
I do too, Peter. You know, already, as you know, they're doing it in ads. Let's say you want to look for something. You want to look for a flower pot or a bed or whatever. All of a sudden, those ads start following you all over the place. I've got to tell you a funny story directly related to that. A couple of weeks ago, I got an email from one of our listeners who said, did you know that there's, you know, kind of pornographic stuff on one of your guests' websites? And I went, well, this can't be. None of our guests will do that. So I go to the website, and it's not there. It dawned on me that whoever sent me the email was doing a little perusing on his own on sites he shouldn't be seen, and they followed him.
Yep. And it's interesting that if you look at all the information sites on the web, the ones that are really up with the technology before anyone else are the guys doing the pornography. They always have the best technology. Video coding, decoding, all of that technology is adopted by those people faster than anybody else. Kind of interesting, isn't it?
All about the money, isn't it, Peter?
It's all about the money.
In terms of cutting-edge companies that are out there, the ones we know right now, Microsoft, Apple, and companies like that, are they the ones that are going to lead us into the next movement?
That's a really good question. One of the philosophies of growth now, with many of the leading-edge companies, is not to do an awful lot of basic research and development, but to go out there and look for the startup companies, these new enterprises, these new groups of people, and buy into them early. So it's sort of growth by acquisition and R&D, if you will, by proxy. That is happening in an awful lot of industries, especially technology, and it's an interesting way of changing the industry. My take is there will be a new Apple, there will be a new Microsoft, there will be a new Cisco. The companies that are really going to shake things are probably going to be things that pop up and grow at a phenomenal rate. What people forget is that for every Apple or Cisco or Amazon, Facebook, there are thousands and thousands of failures. Spotting the ones that are really going to take off is incredibly difficult.
Yep.
But believe me, they're out there.
That's the art, if you can find them.
If you can find them, indeed.
But it's just exciting. I just love technology. I want to talk with you in a moment, Peter, when we come back, about what Samsung is doing with its smartwatch. That's fascinating. I remember the old Dick Tracy cartoon days, remember?
Indeed.
Talking to their watch. Well, we're headed that way, aren't we?
Absolutely. And we've been heading that way for at least the last 15 years.
All right. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the television sets and flat screens, where we're headed in that direction, and just the future of technology. Peter Cochran, our special guest tonight. His websites are linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Also, he's written a couple books on Uncommon Sense, and the other one is What Do Machines Think? And that's also a great question. what do they think? Speaking of technology, Facebook, Twitter, and we've now got Instagram all going for you. Just go to coasttocoastam.com, far right-hand corner. David Wilcock joins us next hour. We'll be talking with him about the synchronicity key. I'm looking forward to that. Peter Cochran with us this hour as we talk about artificial intelligence and new technology as well. This smartwatch that the Samsung is working on, how close are we to getting this out into the marketplace, Peter?
I think what they've got is a sort of concept model right now, but it can't be all that far away. You prompted me to search back through my archive, and I came up with a little movie of me demonstrating what we called the office you wear, which was like a giant gauntlet, way back in 1992 to 1994. And what you can't see on this little movie is a rather thick umbilical cord that went up my shirt sleeve, down my back of my pants and out my trouser leg to a room full of computers next door. Here's a remarkable thing. Around about 1994, that wristwatch, that iPhone on your wrist, that mobile phone that you're going to wear, if you will, where we've now got a working prototype in Samsung, and it's all powered and sits on your wrist, that was a VAX computer just back a mere 20 years ago. That's absolutely astonishing. So it's getting close. I have seen flexible displays. I've seen multi-layered technology where you can actually print circuits that include the battery, the electronic circuit, the sensitive touch area, and the display as a sandwich of film that goes through a press that's pretty much like printing a carpet, if you will. So we're heading towards things with no connectors, things that are so slim and so flexible that they become compliant to your body. You know, ladies don't have pockets as a general rule, but men do. And when you sit down and you've got your mobile phone in your back pocket or your front pocket,
yeah,
it hurts. If you've got your phone in your top pocket, your shirt sags. And the history really goes back to what I would call the carriage clock, the fob watch, and the wristwatch. We've been here before. The technology is going to be wearable.
It is truly bizarre, too, because when you see someone with an older phone, a flip phone,
yeah,
he looks like a dinosaur, you know. And I had a couple of people a couple of years ago came up to me and said, that's a dinosaur phone. Get rid of it. And then when you see people who still have the phone where the antenna comes up, you pull it out. I mean, they really look old. So I would guess, you know, as the years click by, what we think today is hip and current might be outdated and archaic.
Absolutely. And that time span is shortening rapidly. You know, I can remember going from a mobile phone that was the size of a briefcase in the trunk of my car to something that I could barely carry, to what you would think of now as a chocolate bar, to something that is now quite astounding. It's not just that the size has got smaller, it's the performance that's got astonishing. Not only are those bricks outdated, they can barely do text. You can't use them on the internet. They're more like a weapon than a mobile phone.
Why is it, Peter, when technology does get smaller, it seems to get better, faster, whatever?
A lot of the time, that's about size, distance, and the mobility of atoms. So if you go back to making the very early computers, and they were made with, first of all, fermionic tubes.
And they were as big as a room.
And they were as big as a room, and they were as hot as you can imagine. It was like walking into Hades, walking into a computer room in those days. Then the transistors came along, and they replaced them. To get from one end of a room to the other is a significant amount of time in terms of computing speed. But to get across a chip that is no more than a couple of millimeters across, that's a phenomenally short time in comparison. So the smaller things get, the faster they get. And as a result, the more powerful you get. Also, the more devices that you can pack in. You know, I'm sat here with my mobile phone in front of me. There is more computing power, more memory in this mobile phone than was on this planet in 1956. That is the scale of the change.
Let's take a few calls here for you, Peter. We'll go to Jill and Cody, Wyoming, to get things started here. Hello, Jill. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
We are well, thanks.
Okay. I got two laptops. I can't use either one of them. I'm going crazy, all right? Now, one's a Mac, and the other one, brand new, is PC with Windows 8.
What do you mean you can't use it? Why? What's wrong?
Oh, my God. I had electrical surge. Anyhow, it's a long story. I won't get into it. But I can't get online. So this Windows 8, I called my internet provider, you know, and they said that they're having a lot of problems with Windows 8. 75% of their calls, they said, are about Windows 8. You know anything about it?
Checking it. And, Jill, you sound just like Dan Aykroyd's sister, if he had one.
Well, I'm originally from Chicago, but we got a lot of transplants out here.
Okay. All right. Any problems with Windows 8, Peter?
No, I have to say that I operate in Microsoft free zone. I don't have any applications whatsoever from Microsoft. Personal choice. I had to reset my friend's computer recently. I waded into Windows 8 and fixed it. My advice, Jill, is look around your community, find yourself a really friendly geek, and slip them a few dollars to fix it for you. It's likely not a big deal, not a big problem. Usually it's about ticking the right boxes, but if you don't know where those boxes are, if you don't know how to set the machine up, you will really struggle. There's no point. Find yourself a friendly geek in the neighborhood.
Good point. Let's go to Jack, San Diego. Jack, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I want to get back to artificial intelligence.
You got it.
And advance this conversation to somewhere in the not-too-distant future, where we say, hypothetically, we've perfected self-replicating artificial intelligence. The cost of labor is zero because we've taken man out of the equation. What kind of society will we have? Will we have a utopian society where you can have anything you want because labor is zero? Or will wealth be in the hands of the few? In other words, when we get to that point, how will we earn money, and what will happen to the concept of money if we can't work? And I'm talking about humans now.
I get you, Jack, and we've been asking that question for centuries, you know, right from the cotton invention of the cotton gin through the Industrial Revolution. Every new technology that comes along either displaces people, creates absolute mayhem, but then transforms society. If you go back 20 years and you said you'd got a job as a webmaster, people would go, huh? What the heck is a webmaster or a web designer? All the work, all the jobs that people are now doing at the leading edge didn't exist 20 years ago. Here is the big problem, and this is where artificial intelligence might help us. What you're describing is a really big, complex problem. We invoke technological change without any aforethought of the outcome, and we suffer the consequences. That's not because we're callous. That's not because we don't care. That's not because we're in some way stupid, but we are ignorant of the ways in which we can predict what is going to happen. And what we're talking about here is hyper-complex problems, problems of the scale of the weather, sustainability, trying to understand the human brain, trying to subsume all of medical knowledge. It's a problem on that kind of scale. It's a political problem. It's a social organization problem. Human beings don't do it very well. We are actually looking to the machines to help us understand those problems and see if we can schedule the change, marshal the change of technology, so that we don't get this rapid and massive displacement. The big problem is that technological change is now happening on a scale and at a speed that human beings cannot match.
We can't keep up with it at all. Peter, we're going to come back and talk about life with a wearable camera wherever you may go. Next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back. Peter Cochran with us. We'll take your calls as well. Peter, you know, the Google eyewears, the glasses now, and, you know, cameras everywhere. Do you see the day where people will be recording, just like the Truman Show, I guess, everyday life just with little cameras on them?
It's already happening. People have been doing it for some time. This really has been on the go for at least 20 years. The best reference that I can think of for any of your listeners who want to dig down into this topic is to search Gordon Bell, My Life Bits. Gordon is with Microsoft, is older than me, and is one of my treasured friends. He's been wearing a camera for a long while, and he started off by recording all the documents he could find in his life, all the paper documents, all the electronic documents, and making them searchable. And then he started wearing a camera, and his camera takes a snapshot every few seconds. And there are some wonderful side effects. One, it's all annotated and searchable. And secondly, you can have a run through any day of your life inside about 3 minutes. So if you imagine a time lapse sequence of a day where you've taken a photograph every minute throughout your day, you can recall the whole day. It's quite astonishing. Is this a positive thing or a negative thing? Time will tell. But I tell you an interesting side effect. When we experience something, when we have a day, we remember things, but then that memory fades with time. And when you look at a photograph, your remembrance is boosted. But what is astonishing is that when you look at a movie or a photograph, the day you remember and the day that was have drifted apart. And that memory, that wearable camera, would correct that. Will it happen?
It sure will.
My guess is it will.
It sure will. Gosh, I remember the days between the wars between Beta and VHS, with VHS winning, and then we went into the DVD realm. You know, now you can simply just sit back and, you know, go to Netflix or Blockbuster online and dial up what you want, and at any time, anybody can get something. That technology, too, Peter, is absolutely unbelievable.
Yep. I no longer own a CD or a DVD, and I'm gradually getting rid of all my books. Books are great thermal insulation for your home. I put them on the outside wall on a shelf. They're great.
Let's go to first-time caller Armando in Venice, California. Hello, Armando.
Hello, George Maestro. You are amazing, I must say, congratulations. I want to congratulate you on the wonderful work that you do with your prayer group, too, and meditation.
You are welcome. It's working.
Yes, sir. And, Peter, I'm a very good friend of Michael Zaida, you know, the head of the University of Southern California's gaming division.
Yes.
And he was mentioning, he used to work with Silicon Graphics years ago also, and
indeed,
he was mentioning they now have access to that new quantum computer. He has a center in Marina Del Rey where they have it. And I was wondering if you could comment about that, as well as he mentioned something about, because I asked them, you know, George, inquiring, you know, to people like him about what he thought about ETs and all that, which I'm, you know, totally fascinated with.
Yep.
And he mentioned, well, you know, that to think about communication with other species. He gave me a little hint that maybe they're using that computer for something like that. You know what I mean? Which is a fascinating thought, you know, to be able to communicate with animals and things, right?
Yep. Well, it's interesting, Armando. I was in, on Venice Beach only earlier in the year, and I know this worked really well. And quantum computing is one of those dreams. Gee, there is a Canadian group that have a machine out. There are many American groups working on it. If we could perfect the quantum computer, we could instantaneously solve an awful lot of problems. But I think in the line of your question, one of the most exciting things to my mind are the medical applications of quantum mechanics, quantum technology, is exactly as you ask your question, can we communicate with other species and other things? So I look at interesting experiments, and there is one that really, really gives me great hope. People who have been comatose for 10 years or more have been put into an MRI scanner, and they've been asked this question: I would like you to think about playing tennis. And about 60% of cases, people's brains light up in the same way that you and I would light up if we were asked that question. But we are articulate and we can communicate what we think. So these people are not buried alive. They're entombed in meat space. They can't output. They can't speak. And yet, inside that head is an intelligent human being locked in. People are now working on trying to provide these people with a means of communication direct from the brain so that they can actually have a conversation of some kind. Right now, it's a yes-no conversation. As we go down that line, what we're going to discover is that more and more species and more things have innate intelligence that is greater than we think and greater than we have ever anticipated. So of the higher life forms, you think of dolphins and elephants who have actually got bigger brains and more processing power than we have, but it's directed to a specific domain in which we don't inhabit. At the other end of the scale, you find modest intelligence in things like plants that will turn to the sun, that will regulate their behavior with humidity and with temperature and with light. And people on the skepticism side will say, oh, that's just reaction. Well, actually, reaction is a form of intelligence in that sense. So I look forward with some anticipation and excitement of where this technology is going, how we might be able to apply it to everybody and everything's advantage.
Can you just imagine what it'll be like 10, 15 years from now, Peter?
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
I sometimes think, George, I was born too early. I should have been born 20 years later.
You would have loved it. Stay healthy. Let's see if we can get one more call in. Phyllis in Oregon, we'll try to squeeze you in here. Phyllis, go ahead.
Oh, my gosh. What a pleasure to speak with both of you gentlemen tonight. Thank you so much.
Sure.
My question is, I was a civil service employee forever, and my first computing job was on a Coke 200, it was in this gigantic room with reel-to-reel tapes, humidity control, temperature control, everything else. My question is basically, though, if Nikola Tesla's ideas were, if he was still alive and able to put them in place, how do you think the difference would be in computer technology right now?
That's a great question. We've only got about a minute left, Peter. If Tesla were around today, I think we'd be way up the scale, don't you?
Oh, I often think that about people like Michelangelo, Einstein,
Da Vinci.
Newton. Give those people the tools we have today, they would have changed a lot more than they did. Absolutely no doubt.
Yet we do have our geniuses of today, don't we?
Absolutely. And in actual fact, I wouldn't like to have some kind of league table, but I think they're every bit as good as the Teslas and the Einsteins and the Newtons, believe me.
I think so, too. Is this, in 30 quick seconds, is the United States, England, are they pumping out brainiacs, or are other countries doing it way beyond us?
We don't have any special right to that ability. Other cultures, other people are generating that kind of brain power. The thing that we do have is, if you like, the irreverence to authority, the freedom to go where we want and do what we want, and we communicate and network probably like no other nation.
Well, that's why so many of those brainiacs want to come here in order to do what they do. Thank you so much, Peter. Up next, David Wilcock joins me. The Synchronicity Key is next on Coast to Coast AM.